Team Ace Finnegan and Donick 102.5 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. Willie Donick will join us shortly.
Mm-hmm.
He's stuck taking his glamour shots.
Ching, ching.
Such a diva.
Ahead of the Nashville Predators season. Today is the opening of training camp. The Predators are on the ice for the first time tomorrow. But today is the day where all of the players and the broadcasters, they take their glamour shots and stuff for the scoreboard. So Willie is late because he's so vain.
Yeah, that's Willie.
That's Willie.
Willie D. No.
If there is one word I could use to describe Willie Donick, it is vain.
No. That's not Willie. That's Willie D.
Yeah, that's Willie D. That's not Willie. That's Willie D.
That is correct.
Yes.
Commissioner Willie D.
You know what? I'm listening to our opener, and I just realized that mm-hmm. it's a great opener, but when they, after they, you know, say my name,
yes,
then they say, then the break is, the fans won't like that. I'm like, we may need to change that.
That just occurred to you?
I just sat here and thought about it. Like, what? Like, we may need to change the wording a little bit.
Okay.
You know, just change the wording a little bit. That's all. Because the fans will like us. The fans do like us. They love us. Those that listen to the station.
That,
they love us.
That is true. And we don't want to confuse anybody. We don't want y'all to think that Derek is saying that you don't like us.
Exactly.
What would be the point of that?
Absolutely. Y'all love us.
Take it up with the big guy.
Yeah, y'all love us. And then also, I've been listening to this song, and this song has gotten in my spirit. Actually, it's a daughter of a guy that I play with, Mike Jones.
Okay.
Coco Jones and Justin Timberlake, ICU. This song has gotten so much in my soul that I hear it now as we're talking. It's a really good song, really good song. So I just want to throw that out there. Coco Jones, Mike Jones, her dad, parents. I think they still live. Mike still lives here.
What's the name of the song?
ICU.
Okay.
ICU. It's a remix with Justin Timberlake. It's a pretty good song.
Okay.
Pretty good song.
You know what song I heard today
that
warms my soul? Opposites Attract. Paula Abdul featuring MC Scat Cat. What a fantastic song.
You're talking about the 90s? Late 90s?
Sirius XM said it came out in 1990.
Yeah. Well, it's early 90s.
Woo. Wasn't even born.
I was headed into high school.
My son
90,
was ready.
I was in high school.
My son was ready to go into school. I said, wait a minute, Arlo. we can't go until we hear MC Scat Cat's Bridge.
We need to jam out for a minute.
Right.
Okay, ain't nothing wrong with that, jamming out with your son for a minute.
If he saw the video and saw that MC Scat Cat is literally a cartoon cat, he might
would
like
love
the
it.
Song.
Yes.
So,
get
anyway,
the kids used to the good music, man. Get the kids used to the good music.
That is true. If I do say so myself, I think we have an outstanding show planned for all of you today. Coming up in the next segment, as Derek Mason spills his
I got apples, and I got Kit Kats, but I had
what
to put
hell,
a
Derek?
No. Here, you got to understand, because it's hot. Thank you, David. My glasses. Because it's hot outside, and I went and got my buddies, my crew, food today. So I knew I was going to be in the car for a while waiting on the food. So I packed my Kit Kats and I put a cold pack in there. So it will not melt while I was sitting in the car because it was hot in the car. So I just think
I need to keep a log of the food that Derek Mason brings into the show every day, because the amount of food he brings in, it's like he's prepared for the apocalypse. Straight out of a fallout shelter.
Hey, man, you got to have all your bases covered when you come to work, man, and eat. You got to have them all covered.
I mean, we're only on the air for 3 hours. How many apples does one man need in
and
three
you never,
hours?
You never know, man.
Okay.
Anything can happen.
At least we've seen five.
There could be a blizzard. It could be 20 feet of snow. We got to be stuck in here for a day. I got some food. I got us covered.
Anyway, ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky will join us in roughly 15 minutes. We're looking forward to talking to Orlovsky about Cam Ward and the Tennessee Titans. I have a lot of respect for Dan Orlovsky as an analyst, so looking forward to getting into the weeds with him on Cam Ward and the Tennessee Titans. Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us at 5 o'clock. And then, of course, week 4 of Silly Underdog Picks coming up at 5:20, and we will let you know closer to that time what the prize is if you are chosen to represent the people It's a good prize. So be listening in the third hour for that. But Derek Mason, mm-hmm. I'll let you dictate where we go with this first segment. Do you want a serious update or do you want a silly update?
Hit me with the serious. I'm in a serious mood right now.
I didn't get that vibe.
I'm in a serious mood right now.
So the Tennessee.
I mean, serious meaning get to business.
All right. The serious update. The Tennessee Titans practiced today. Practice is now over. And there was no sign of the following players at Tennessee Titans practice today. J.C. Latham, of course, still dealing with a hip injury that mm-hmm. kept him out of the game on Sunday against the Rams. Devondre Sweat, who also did not play mm-hmm. on Sunday. Bryce Oliver, Kevin Zeitler, and L'Jarius Sneed. And here's what I find interesting. I saw this update in a couple of places. No sign of L'Jarius Sneed, in parentheses, back, not knee. So now L'Jarius Sneed has a back injury in addition to a knee injury?
Oh, okay.
Where did that come from?
I tell you where it came from. He hasn't been, I mean, he hasn't been doing anything. And when I say he hasn't been doing anything, like these first 2 weeks has been his first opportunity to get some action. He didn't play all preseason, barely practiced, did some stuff on the side. But it wasn't until right before the season where he started to sort of get into, or they tried to slowly bring him into playing shape. You saw what happened the first game. He only played half of the game. He comes back, you play a full game. His body is still not in condition. That's why I believe the back is hurting now. Not only do you have a knee, but you also got a sore back potentially because of, you know, you getting out there in the wear and tear after the second game. So I would tend to believe he's going to play. They didn't say anything about his back Sunday after the game.
This is the first I'm seeing that L'Jarius Sneed is dealing with a back injury.
Yeah, so I just think it's probably more than likely just tightness.
Okay.
And they just want to, you know, sit him down for a day. Because, I mean, it coincides probably more than likely with his rest he would get for the knee anyway. So you rest him for his back and, you know, you kind of move on from there.
Devondre Sweat addressed reporters after practice, and he sounded optimistic that he will be available for the Titans game against the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday. He did not play with an ankle injury against the LA Rams, but Sweat said after practice today he is hopeful he can play on Sunday. As for J.C. Latham, the Titans will monitor his hip injury throughout the week. Brian Callahan mentioned that if Latham can't go, you might see John Ojukwu back out there. You might see Ali Udo, a.k.a. Ali Uh-Oh, a.k.a. Ali Ono, a.k.a. Ali Rutro out there. It's get well soon, JC. Let me just say that. The less I have to see of John Ojukwu or Ali Udo, the better. But the Titans will monitor Latham throughout the week. He's dealing with the hip injury. He did not practice today. But, God, the idea of another game featuring John Ojukwu in a starting role, I don't like the sound of that. Although the Colts do not have the type of pass rushers that the Broncos have and the Rams have, we saw what happens when you put those replacement right tackles on the field. It does not go well for the Titans.
No, it doesn't. It hasn't. And unless there's a change of fortune, I can't expect to see, you know, anything better than what they've showed the last couple of games. This JC thing, they're going to have to really monitor because you don't want, if it's a hip injury, you don't want to rush him back to potentially lose him because he was in that first game, he was noticeably limping. You can tell that something was wrong with him. I don't know if it happened during the game, before, whatever. But he's dealing with the hip, and it's severe enough that it kept him out of the last game. If I'm the Titans, I'm not putting him back in there unless he's 100%. I'm not. Because him at 80%, yeah, he's better than the other guys, but he's still hurting himself out there, and he's not the best version of himself that he can be. So until he's close, at least 100% or close to it, why even throw him out there? But they're going to miss him if he's not there because what we saw last week was indicative of what we had been seeing, you know, all last year at that position. the right tackle just couldn't hold up.
So we will keep an eye on all of that as the week progresses, as the Titans are prepared, or they are getting prepared, I should say, to play the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday. All right, time for the silly update. Now that we've gotten the serious update.
It ain't about Bill Belichick, is it?
It is not about Bill Belichick. I haven't seen him do anything worth mentioning lately, but that could change in an instant. The silly update. So, as you may have heard, Diego Pavia and Theo Vaughn, who is a prominent podcaster, I guess made some sort of deal that if Pavia helped the Commodores defeat South Carolina, mm-hmm. that Pavia would set up Theo Vaughn with Diego's mother on a date. Well, Diego Pavia held up his end of the bargain because Vanderbilt crushed South Carolina 31-7 on Saturday in Columbia. Then Pavia followed up and said, what Theo Vaughn forgot to tell you is that I said I would do it if he could set me up with Tate McRae, who is a world-famous pop star.
Mm-hmm.
So, yesterday, Theo Vaughn posted a screenshot of DMs he sent to Tate McRae, who, by the way, has 7.9 million followers on Instagram. And Theo Vaughn wrote, quote, hey, Tate, my friend said I can take his mom on a date, but only if he's able to take you on a date. Here is a pic of him with a screenshot of Pavia from an interview he did on ESPN. If you don't want to go on a date with him, I can also take you on a date.
So he's shooting his, he's trying to get Pavia a date all while shooting his shot.
Correct.
Too. I mean.
You got to admire it.
Yeah, you do. And listen, she has how many followers?
7.9 million followers on
okay.
Instagram.
Okay. When do you think she gets back to him? If she gets back to him at all?
Never.
Next September.
Well, if Vandy keep on winning, yes, it, oh, she, they'll get back. They will get back to him.
Tate McRae,
mm-hmm.
I can only imagine what her DMs are like.
That's what I'm saying.
It's like, probably a cesspool of thirsty men looking to date her. And I'm sure there are people more famous than Theo Vaughn, and Theo Vaughn is famous. But I'm sure there are people more famous than Theo Vaughn sliding into those DMs. So I'm sure she's not surprised by it.
It ain't about how famous. Look at Travis Kelce. I mean, look at Kelce and
Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift. Kelce is not as Kelce is known.
Yes.
But compared to
yes. His fame yes, pales in comparison.
Exactly. Like,
to his fiance.
So it can happen. It can happen.
It can happen. I
I'm just trying to
happen.
Give him some hope.
Diego Pavia, I am rooting for you. Mm-hmm. I am rooting for you that Tate McRae will take you will let you take her on a date so that Theo Vaughn can bag your mom. Good Man. Luck.
I don't know if I would have made that bet. Why would I even made that bet? Like, why am I, you know, I'm not going to even say what you're doing. But why would I do that? I'm going to win the game, and I ain't going to put my mom on the block, okay? I'm not doing that.
You're not putting your mama out?
And I'm not. Like,
so
I'm not doing
know.
That.
Tell me if they do this in football. Uh-huh. In hockey, there is a tradition called money on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it happens when a player goes back to play his former team.
Mm-hmm.
And that player will put money on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And if the team wins or the player accomplishes a certain goal, he'll pay out.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think Diego Pavia walked into Vanderbilt's locker room at South Carolina on Saturday and just wrote, my mom, on the board or something like that? That motivated everybody. Eli Stowers said, hey, man, I'll do it for your mom.
It could have went that way. But no, I'm like, dude, I'm doing it because I'm Diego. That's why we gonna win. I bet you a brewski or something. I don't know, but I ain't gonna put my mom on a block, man. I'm just not doing it.
Well, he did.
But I love Diego, and I know it's all funny games.
So
but.
Stay tuned for the important updates on whether Diego Pavia will score a date with Tate McRae, and by
I hope he does.
Theo Vaughn will score a date with Diego Pavia's mom.
I hope he does.
Very
score
important
a date
information.
With
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by Wilson County Hyundai SiriusXM.com. We'll get back to Sirius in just a few moments when Dan Orlovsky, ESPN NFL analyst, will join us on the program. We will get into the weeds with Orlovsky on Cam Ward and the Tennessee Titans. That is coming up next. 615-737-1025. Hey, this Friday, you can join us, Willie, Derek, and I, as we broadcast live from 3 to 6 p.m. at Jimmy Kelly Steakhouse as they celebrate the opening of their all-new rooftop dining area and bar. It's also a great place to go before the big Vanderbilt game this Saturday night. D-Mace Vingen and Donick 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. We are endeavoring Dan Orlovsky, ESPN NFL analyst. Thank you. I believe that is the proper usage of the word endeavoring. And if I'm mistaken, well,
can't take the ding back.
Endeavoring means try hard to do or achieve something, which is what David James is doing right now.
Yes, absolutely.
So that works. So we will be joined by Dan Orlovsky as soon as he answers his phone on our conversation about Diego Pavia and Theo Vaughn. Mm-hmm. Ricky on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, so Vanderbilt's new slogan, come here, be a doctor, a lawyer, or a pimp. Gotta love it. As long as they're winning football, I guess it's a new curriculum for the school.
Oh, man. Hey, listen, it's all gravy when you're winning. So just keep winning, Diego. That's all. Keep winning.
One texter asks if Theo Vaughn is normally at the Vandy games. I do not know the answer to that. He must be because he has a relationship with Diego Pavia.
Is his podcast here?
I don't know where he's based. I'm not a Theo Vaughn fan. Nothing against Theo Vaughn. He's just not my cup of tea.
I don't even know who. I don't know who he is, but that doesn't mean that he's not somebody just because I don't know who he is. But I've never heard of him. Should I have? I don't know. Maybe.
Josh says, oh, it's already set up with a specific person. That dude better have some money. You don't put your mama on the block for some broke jokes, LOL.
Now I got everybody saying, stop it, people. Stop it. I'm not putting it. I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have said Diego. I can't put my mom on the No, but we love Diego, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Diego.
We do.
So, a wonderful
representative of our fair city.
Yes, but, you know, as we effort Orlovsky, Big Joe asked me a question coming in. And it was an interesting question. It was a simple question, but it was an interesting question. He said, adjusting do coaches do at halftime? And one would tend to believe like, okay, because the coach always said, we got to go in, we got to make adjustments, and we got to come back out and play for the better football. And I think when people hear that, they hear, oh, he's going to change a bunch of plays. He's going to call some new ones. He's not going to call the ones that he called, you know, in the first half. Well, a little bit of that is true, just a tad bit. The tad bit that's true is, yeah, he will call some different plays, but that's the plays he haven't gotten to, you know, some plays that he had already game plan for throughout the game, but they just hadn't gotten to him for whatever reason, whether it was because, you know, they just couldn't generate anything as the Titans have been, going three and outs, turnovers, getting pushed back third and long. So, yeah, that part is true. That, yes, we're going to try to run some plays we haven't ran, but it's not like new plays we're just throwing in the playbook. These are plays that we ran in practice this week, and we know we can run them the way we need to. Now we need to do it in the second half because they've shown us some things on defense that may expose them. But also, we're still running some of the same plays, but it may be out of a different formation, maybe out of different personnel, but they're all running. It's not like they're changing plays. When you talk about adjustment, you're adjusting some of the formations. You may not be as predictable, you know, this formation out of this motion, we ran boot right and we threw the crosser. Now we may do the same motion and hand it to the running back and let the running back go, but it all looks like a boot. Those are adjustments that I know of. But when fans hear it, it's like, oh, they're running a whole new game plan. No, they're not running a whole new game plan. They may be running some new plays they didn't get to in the first half, but they're not running anything that's not in the playbook already that they put together.
I stumbled across an article on sportsillustrated.com earlier today, written by Connor Orr, with the headline, NFL Panic Meter, ranking every 0-2 team based on desperation. 10 teams are still winless after week 2. Which teams will right the ship and which fan bases should actually be worried? And Derek, before I scroll down to read this story, I expected the Tennessee Titans to be near the bottom of this list because they were the worst team in the NFL last season. Most people expected the Titans to be 0-2 when the season started. So I thought I would find the Titans near the bottom of this list. So I was sort of surprised to find the Titans near the top of this list. Connor Orr gave the Titans' panic score 8.5, which I found to be interesting. And here is some of what Connor Orr wrote, and I want you to tell me if you agree. Quote, in fairness to myself, drafting a quarterback with the number one pick immediately creates an outsized grading scale full of irresponsible projections and a microwaved timeline of success. In the case of Tennessee in particular, this is a franchise building a new stadium it is hoping to fill with devoted season ticket holders in the near future. I am guessing Brian Callahan is very much aware of this. However, Callahan has already publicly whiffed on knowing a rule that could have impacted a critical challenge. Tennessee is also second to last in the NFL in points in the second half, which is often a statistic associated with play callers and their ability to make adjustments. So while panic may be the wrong word here, there is indeed frustration. And when there is frustration as it pertains to the development of the franchise's most important player, whose highlights are very individual at this point and not necessarily tied into the scheme, you can certainly say that there is a right to be concerned about the future. Do you agree with Connor Orr's assessment there?
Oh, boy. Yes, I do, in a sense, because he's right. You have to develop this quarterback. And what the quarterback has shown you is, okay, you shouldn't panic because it seems like he is the guy, so we shouldn't panic. But then on the other side, you're looking at the play caller, and the offense isn't flowing the way it needs to flow. Is it play calling? Is it players? Is it a combination of both? Is it him not quite in sync with this quarterback? So that part, to a lot of fans, may be a cause for panic because they're like, listen, we seen in the first year, it didn't work, and it didn't work with a second-year quarterback, a young second-year quarterback that they had high hopes on. And even though the new quarterback, the first pick in the draft, looks like he's going to be that guy, that other stuff still isn't quite there yet. And I don't know if it is if it's going to be there, meaning his play calling. I think that's how people feel. So you get the, what was it, 8.5?
8.5.
Out of what, 10?
I assume 10.
Yeah, 10. So you get the panic meter high.
By the way, the only team with a higher panic score among winless teams, according to Connor Orr, no surprise here, the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, for their own reason. Because Miami has talent. But they just, the quarterback situation, everything that's going on. But also, you look at, you know, the roster. Is this a roster that you can, you know, feel good about? I'm not sure that's the case. Now, you got some players on this roster that you like and feel good about, but do you feel good about the roster as a whole with this young quarterback and that young coach? It seems like from what we are gathering, from at least the last 2 weeks, they don't trust the coach. People don't trust the coach. They don't trust the play call. They trust the quarterback. They're good with the quarterback. I think everybody's come on here and said something glowing about the quarterback that is not his fault. They just don't trust the play caller, who is the head coach.
The one line that stuck out to me is, and when there is frustration as it pertains to the development of the franchise's most important player, whose highlights are very individual at this point and not necessarily tied into the scheme. That is the line that stuck out to me.
And that's why I said yesterday, we love all these off-script plays. They loved that about Caleb Williams last year too. But he didn't develop himself inside the pocket. And now they're trying to do it in Chicago with Ben Johnson. I don't want that to be Cam Ward. I love the exciting plays, him getting outside of the pocket, you know, having the arm stripped to throw it across the field for a touchdown or his role. I love all that stuff. But if you can't get him comfortable in a pocket, how long is that stuff going to work? And how are you developing your quarterback from that standpoint? Because you develop a quarterback through the pocket, inside of the pocket, out. You work from in to out. They are forced to work from out to in right now, it seems.
The Titans injury report has been released. J.C. Latham, hip, did not practice. Khalil Mullings, ankle, limited. Bryce Oliver, knee, did not practice. Legarius Sneed, back, did not practice. Tavondre Sweat, ankle, limited. Kevin Winston Jr., hamstring, limited. Kevin Zeitler, bicep, did not practice. So add Kevin Zeitler to the list. And I saw a Paul Kaharsky report when we were on break that he does not anticipate Sneed's back injury from keeping him out of the lineup Sunday against the Colts. So no practice today for J.C. Latham with a hip, Bryce Oliver with a knee, Legarius Sneed with a back injury, and Kevin Zeitler with a bicep injury. Tavondre Sweat was limited with an ankle injury, so just keep that in mind. Chris from Clarksville on our text line, Derek, says, to Derek's question about adjustments being made at halftime as a coach, honestly, I might tweak an offensive play like Derek said, but most of my adjustments go towards my defense to stop something that we aren't stopping currently.
Yeah, and you see that on defenses, whether, you know, they're disguising their blitzes a little bit different, getting into a different front, stuff like that, you know. But on offense, again, it's not necessarily that you are running anything new that wasn't in the game plan. You just haven't run it yet, and you're trying to find a way to make sure that in the second half you can get to those plays. So how do we get to those plays? Well, we're going to have to run this play to make it look like this play. We're going to have to do it out of this formation, you know, and maybe it fools them. It makes them hesitate for just a second, but it's still the same play, but just out of a different formation. Those are the adjustments that you play when he's playing. Okay, you know, the first half, they played a lot of cover two. Okay, we didn't really, you know, probably we didn't know that they were going to play that much cover two, but because they're playing us, they're playing that much cover two because they can get to the quarterback with four rushers. Well, now we got to, this is what we need to do, guys. We need to, you know, convert that either to a go or we got to convert it to a seven route. We got to do it, or we can work it, you know, widen the guy out a little bit and run the slant. These are all adjustments that we talk about as little bitty things within, you know, the game plan that we've run already. You know, go extra yard on that route, on that comeback route because the defense is playing you like this, or take two off next time because they're blitzing and we got to hit it quickly and you got to take two yards off. So those are the adjustments that teams make from an offensive standpoint, not just that whole revamp of an offense.
I don't recall when Kevin Zeitler suffered his injury on Sunday, do you?
Mm-hmm. I don't. I just know I looked up and there was hands in the game. So, and I didn't even know when. I didn't realize that Zeitler was out.
Well, if J.C. Latham can't play and Kevin Zeitler can't play, there's your right side of your offensive line, ooh, which has come under fire already, oof, missing two starters on that side of the ball.
But this is where. I believe Brian Callahan earns that trust of his players, his quarterback, and the fan base. We're going to see how well you design a game plan to not get your quarterback hit, knowing that more than likely your right tackle isn't playing and maybe your left guard, your right guard isn't playing either. So how are you going to put together this game plan to protect your quarterback? Hell, you got to protect him on the left side, but now you really got to protect him on the right side.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll take all of your thoughts on the Tennessee Titans. Coming up next, Blake Bedingfield, who writes for PaulKaharsky.com and used to work for the Tennessee Titans, suggested something in his review after the game against the Rams that I want all of us to discuss, because I do think some of you may support this idea. But we're going to dig into it coming up next. 615-737-1025. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. Willie Donick has joined us.
Hello.
Glad that your glamour shots are done.
Did you give your Zoolander look?
Blue Steel.
Blue Steel.
Well, you know Hal Gill was on the set, so you know there was some tomfoolery involved.
Hal would add like 20 minutes to the picture taking.
Yeah, and Chris Mason.
So that's 40 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. You put that together, that added a little extra time. But we had fun.
Oh, man.
Well, we'll talk to Hal Gill later in the program.
Oh, yeah, a lot of buzz about as who he's going to pick today.
As we kick off week four of Silly Underdog Picks, Chris Sanders has the first pick. He's already told us that he might be a little late.
Questionable.
Well, if he isn't here for his pick, David's going to make his pick for him. Mm-hmm. So I'm just letting Chris know that now. We moved this competition for Chris Sanders, and he still can't bother to show up on time.
He needs more pull with his head coach.
Yeah. More pull.
Practice must end on Wednesdays for the Big Red at 5:18.
If this was Derek Mason in the same position, he would have that clout.
Oh, I'd tell him, I'm out of here.
But not Chris Sanders.
I'm out of here.
Chris Sanders doesn't apparently have that type of pull.
Right. He chooses not to use
at
it.
At NBA.
He chooses not to use it. He got pull. He just chooses not to use it.
Okay. Well, we'll talk to Chris Sanders later in the program and Hal Gill as part of Silly Underdog Picks. We got some of our wires crossed with Dan Orlovsky. We are hoping to have him on later in the program, but looking forward to talking to Dan Orlovsky, hopefully in the second hour. But in the meantime, Blake Bedingfield, who worked in the college scouting department for the Tennessee Titans for nearly two decades, I believe, including time as the director of college scouting, Blake now writes a weekly scouting column for PaulKuharsky.com. And I always find these columns incredibly informative. And no, Paul did not pay me to say all of these things. But if Paul wants to pay me for saying all of these things, I'll send him my Venmo information during the break. So we touched on some of the things that Blake Bedingfield said on his review of the Titans' loss to the Rams. But all the way at the bottom, there was something interesting that I want to read because I think a lot of Titans fans are already here, and I found it interesting that someone like Blake Bedingfield is already suggesting the same thing. Blake writes, quote, "I know the Titans have only played 2 weeks, but this is a rebuilding year, and during those times you must trade assets while they are healthy and playing at a level that has value. My focus going forward would be to trade players that won't be producers, when Ward hits his prime. That is 2 years away. I trade L'Jarius Sneed, Jeffrey Simmons, and Calvin Ridley. I also look to shop Tyler Lockett, Arden Key, Draymond Jones, Sebastian Joseph Day, and Kevin Zeitler. The trade deadline isn't until November 4th. The good news is that the Titans have young players who can fill in. Rookie Marcus Harris, Daryl Baker, and Jalen Armour Davis for Sneed. Rookie Chimdike and Bryce Oliver for Ridley. Veterans Shai Tuttle and James Lynch, and waiver wire pickup CJ Ravenel for Simmons and Joseph Day. Joseph Day, Key, Jones, and Zeitler are all free agents after the season, with very little chance of being back because of age or lack of productions. Xavier Woods would be another trade piece, but I'd wait for rookie Kevin Winston Jr. to get some playing time first," end quote. So Blake Bedingfield is suggesting, after 2 weeks, that the Titans go full-on fire sale before the NFL trade deadline in early November. Two questions. And not just for Willie and Derek, for all of you, at 615-737-1025. Do we agree? Do you agree? And how would we rank the players he mentioned in terms of value?
Well, first off, he listed a lot of players.
Indeed.
When's the last time you saw an NFL team trade more than two or three guys?
That's true.
I mean, it doesn't happen. So realistically, there's no way they could physically do that. But philosophically, I've been saying that. I was saying that in the summer. I've been saying trade Jeffrey Simmons before. And I agree with Bedingfield on the principle. So when you ask the question, what's the value, I think that's why you're the GM. You call around and find out what the value is. They desperately need draft capital. And philosophically, like I've said all throughout, you want to ask yourself the question, is X player going to be the part of the next great Titans team? And I think the benchmark is when that stadium opens. I think this year and next year it is a rebuild, and it couldn't be more clear after two games that that's where they're at roster-wise. Now, it is tough to trade when you have a limited amount of high-end veterans, if you want to call them that, but high-end relative to your team. I think that was a big stress point during the game on Sunday with L'Jarius Sneed. You guys mentioned now he's got a back issue. Well, they went from a pitch count, hey, let's have a pitch count, let's ratchet it up slow, let's take it slow, to he's in there the whole game. And I think what's pulling at them is, hey, we're hanging in this game. He's trying to guard Devontae Adams. We don't have anybody else who can cover Devontae Adams. But you run the risk of exactly what it is now. And he's got another ailment that might be carried with him going forward here, which could hurt his trade value. And so that's the hard part of saying, well, what do we trade all these guys. How are we going to even keep it within 40 points? Right, if they traded every one of those guys, how would you be competitive? What would that do to Cam Ward?
They would be
That's
tanking.
That's the balance.
Period. End of story. If the Titans did what Blake Bedingfield is suggesting,
well, they're going to lose anyway. Right. They're going to lose anyway. So they're
just going to lose.
They can't tank much more than they're tanking.
A lot
right
worse
now.
Than you've been
naturally.
Losing.
They're yes. naturally because guys are going to get hurt, and it's only going to get harder to win. But that's the balance. Is you have to protect Cam Ward above all else.
You can't – I understand what Blake is saying because him probably like a lot of Titan fans are like, man, we've seen enough. This team is not going to be good. So how do we get off the exit ramp very quickly to start trying to rebuild now? So I understand that premise, and I'm not saying that, you know, what he's suggesting is wrong. But you got to understand the people he are suggesting – needs to be traded or potentially can be traded. Until you find you a third receiver, or better yet, a second receiver, you're not getting rid of Calvin Ridley. One, you know, if you wanted to get out of that contract, you can get out of it in 26. So, and then, you know, so if you wanted to get out of it, you can get out of it in 2026, which means nobody else is going to take this cap hit. I don't think any other team is going to take this money that you still owe him, for one. And then I don't think teams are going to be willing to give up what you may be wanting. But even after all of that, even with all that, you don't give up your number one wide receiver when you're trying to develop a young quarterback, especially when you, after two games, have not found a two or a three or a four. You had a two that made some nice catches in Iowa Manor, and I think he's going to be – eventually what they need for this offense, but to me, he's a two. But he doesn't have enough experience yet for you to say, well, I'm going to get rid of my number one, and I'm going to elevate you to number one right now. It's too early for all that. It's too early. Even after two games, I believe it's too early. So some of these guys may end up getting traded, maybe one or two. I can see Lockett being traded because I think eventually they want to get DK in there doing a little bit more. You saw him with the reverses. They want to get him in there a little bit more. And then I think that not only Lockett, but there's a potential for Jeffrey Simmons there. And he may be the biggest fish that you can sort of get the most from or for.
I think we can all agree, if we are answering my second question, which is how would we rank the players Blake Bedingfield mentioned in terms of values? Jeffrey Simmons is number one yes. with the bullet. There is no argument about that. We talked about what the Dallas Cowboys were able to get for Micah Parsons, a couple of first-round picks, a useful defensive tackle. I don't think Jeffrey Simmons would net you the same return, but I am fairly confident. And tell me if you guys think I'm nuts. I'm mm-hmm. fairly confident you could find a team to trade you a first-round pick for Jeffrey Simmons.
Depending on who the team is, yeah. And Jeff seems to be, it seems like he's going to have a hell of a season. So, going into week, what is it, eight? Somewhere around there.
About halfway through
the
season.
Yeah, halfway through the season. And if he's still playing good football, but the Titans are not winning, yeah, he may be able to get, I think he would get, depending on who the team is, they would get a late first-round pick for him.
I think I'd be looking for a first and another top 100 pick.
Yeah. But at least they will get a – at least I think they can get a late first-round pick from a team that knows they will be picking late in the first round.
Well, that's the thing, is because it's probably going to be a team that's contending and therefore a later first-round pick. That's why I want that pick and another pick that's going to be in the top 100. They need swings. And I look at Jeffrey Simmons, who he is – his trade value right now is not going to go any higher than it is as we sit here right now. I don't think. I think you can still get a team to say, yeah, I can see Jeffrey Simmons on my next two or three teams. But Jeffrey Simmons in the new stadium is going to be a 30-year-old guy who, best case, is a pretty highly paid Jarrell Casey-esque, you know, a veteran guy on presumably a younger team. I just don't know if that's a fit. So I would definitely explore that. I've been saying that from the start. It's a bold move. I would shop him.
I'm looking at the players Blake Bedingfield mentioned on paulgaharski.com. We just talked about Jeffrey Simmons. How many of these other players do you think could return a top 100 pick? I don't think you're getting a top 100 pick from L'Jarius Sneed.
Maybe not, a third.
You're okay.
That's why you've got to take care of Sneed. Right, that's why you can't push him in the fourth quarter. That's the tough thing. Is on the field, the coaches are like, "I need Sneed. I need him." But if you're Mike Borgonzi, I'm saying stay with the pitch count. I need Sneed playing every week, ratcheting up so his trade value can get to where you can get the third round pick back.
And I don't think, Derek, you tell me if I'm wrong here. I don't think you're getting a top 100 pick for Calvin Ridley.
No. I can't see somebody giving you a fourth rounder. You know, again, I'm not going to say, when you say top 100 pick, third round,
the Titans have a stated goal of acquiring a certain number of top 100 picks over the next few years.
I think they can get, depending on how Calvin Ridley is playing. This is all. See, we can do it now and say, well, he will not fetch a first round. And we may be right now.
I'm not saying first round pick. I'm saying top 100 pick.
We may say he will not garner a top 100 pick right now. We may say that. But we get into the season and he's one of the bright spots, then he may, or you may be able to get a top 100 pick in next year's draft because a team is down to wide receivers. Wide receivers seem like they drop like flies now. And you got to have a guy that can go out there and make some big plays. And Calvin Ridley can. He drops too many balls, but he can make big plays for a ball club. So I'm not going to sit here and say that he will not garner a top 100 pick, but right now, maybe not.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Blake Bedingfield at PaulGaharski.com suggests that the Titans go full-on fire sale. Trade Jeffrey Simmons. Trade L'Jarius Sneed. Trade Calvin Ridley. Trade Tyler Lockett. Trade Arden Key. And so on and so forth. Do you agree? And which of those players would bring back the most in terms of value? Do you agree with the idea of what basically, I mean, Blake did not say this. I'm putting words in his mouth or on his keyboard. It's tanking. That's what this would be. Let us know how you feel. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vinge, 1025 The Game.